What's up and welcome to the Active Amputee Podcast. Everything people with a limb difference need to live an active and exciting lifestyle. I'm Bjorn Eser, the founder of and shaker and maker behind the Active Amputee. And today you're listening to episode number 39. In episode number 39, I have the pleasure of talking with Kyle Stepp from Albuquerque in New Mexico. Kyle is an elite para-triathlete, he is a mountain enthusiast, and he's someone working towards better access to devices for increased mobility for the limb loss and limb difference community, not just in the US where he's from, but also in the Global South. So welcome to today's show, to episode number 39. Yeah, one of the great things of running the Active Amputee, even if it's only a side title, is that I have the chance to talk to some incredible people. And one of these incredible people is with me today. It's Kyle Stepp from Albuquerque in New Mexico in the US. Kyle is a para triathlete. He is, if I'm not mistaken, he's quite often out hiking and mountain walking. And it seems he's an outdoor enthusiast. Kyle, welcome. It's a real pleasure having you on the show, on actually the first show for 2023. Welcome.
Yeah, I'm excited to be here to kick off an amazing year, as we were chatting before we started recording. It's going to be a really epic year. And so excited to share a little bit about what I'm doing and how we're making a difference in our community.
That's great. Yeah, talking about communities is actually one of the things I really like. Creating community is one of the mottos I have just, you can't see it on the other side of the screen here. Yeah, before we go into what 2023 and the future will bring, let's probably just reverse a bit and see. You're an above knee amputee like myself. You're a cancer survivor. If I'm not mistaken, osteosarcoma survivor, so many similarities. Can you just tell us a bit about your history and how did you become the Kyle Stepp we get to know today?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's what's amazing. You know, one of the crazy parts about, you know, navigating life with limb loss is anyone can experience it at any point in their life, whether it's an illness or an injury. So becoming a part of this community can happen in any parts of someone's journey. And so, you know, as a kid, I grew up in boys' homes and foster care. And in high school was a time where I thought I had a brand new beginning. And, you know, I just moved in with my grandparents when I was in high school. As many in high school, like, you dreamed of getting involved, you want to play sports. And so often for me, extracurriculars and sports were my outlet as a kid. And I was at one place where I felt a sense of normal, where I felt safe. And when I went to high school, when I moved in with my grandparents, I was so excited because, you know, I just spent the past 14 years of my life navigating survival, navigating hardship. And my freshman year, I just wanted to play baseball and get involved in student council. And during my first varsity baseball game, I slid into second base and my knee popped. And what we thought was just a simple knee injury turned out to be stage 4 osteosarcoma. You know, right after I slid into second base, my athletic trainer said, you know, let's just wrap your knee. You probably just have a knee sprain and we'll take a few days to watch it and see if there's any, yeah, you know, so there's no sort of additional injuries. And so a week later, I couldn't bear any weight anymore. And I, you know, as my grandparents were asking me, they're like, Kyle, when was the last time you've been to a doctor? And I couldn't tell you the last time I've been to a doctor at that point. And so I went to my local children's hospital here in New Mexico. And over the course of 24 hours, did every scan you can endure. And the next morning, there was two gentlemen in white coats come in, you know, Dr. James McKinnell and Dr. Robert Quinn, shared with me, we need to do a biopsy because, you know, we have a hunch that you have a tumor. And, you know, we know that you have a tumor in your left leg, but we need to confirm what it is. You know, is it benign or is it cancer? And so, you know, immediately went into spiraling, you know, about what is life going to be like if I do have cancer? Because you hear those words, cancer, and you never think it's going to impact you. And so often you meet so many individuals that are going through it. And it's become, unfortunately, there's not a single person that hasn't been impacted by cancer one way or another, whether it's directly impacted or they knew someone. But so often you never think it's going to be you, and especially at 14 years old. And so, you know, after the biopsy, it was confirmed. It was a high grade form of osteosarcoma. Yeah. And the life that I thought was going to be this beautiful new opportunity turned into a journey of fighting for my life. And so I spent 3.5 years under treatment. But in 2009, after I was diagnosed in 2008, we did a surgery called limb salvage. And limb salvage is often, at that time, was highly recommended if you want to save your limb. But unfortunately, you know, my physician wasn't able to really walk me through, or I didn't really know many other active individuals with limb loss or limb difference. So I didn't have a space to ask questions, to get advice or get perspective on, is this the best option for me? And just, I knew I wanted to save my limb because I was afraid of what life would be like as an amputee. Because at that point in 2009, there was little to no representation in the media. And as well as I didn't know anyone personally with limb loss that was also an active individual that was playing, you know, participating in sports, that was, you know, chasing their dreams and their athletic dreams. And so I knew I didn't want to have, you know, I was afraid of what life would be like as an amputee and how the world or individuals would see me or how it'd show up in the world. And so I would, you know, I'd go through the surgery, but unfortunately had nerve damage that resulted in drop foot. And so I already lived with, you know, I was living with an orthotic, and for 12 years of my life experienced just extreme chronic pain. And through that journey, I was also, you know, navigating life of, you know, learning how to be independent. I'm living with my grandparents. So just the childhood development, I'm navigating fighting cancer, but also struggling with my identity and coming out as gay. So all of those combinations, so afraid of the amputation. And so I fast forward, one of the outlets I found that I could do was, you know, I participated in cycling. Cycling was a major outlet of mine because it was the one thing I could do to unlock the experience of movement feel free. And so I found that sport and got, you know, became competitive in it, but also was my outlet. And so I was always participating, doing things in cycling and mountain biking. And so in fall of 2020, I was downhill mountain biking in Angel Fire, New Mexico, and I was doing what I love. And it was the end of the day. It was a beautiful fall day. You know, the leaves are changing. It's a cool, warmish, like weird, beautiful, beautiful day. It was one of my last runs, and I come off of a jump and my back tire slips out and ended up crashing into a tree and shattering the metal that was implanted in my leg.
Metal implant, 12
years before. And I had this overwhelming, calming sensation that freedom was about to start.
Right then and there.
Yeah. I had this calming feeling. And in the next day, you know, I would be airlifted to the hospital and within 48 hours have my amputation.
And so we're talking this long journey, 2008, 2009 to 2020, with, as you said, all the struggles, the physical, the emotional, the identity struggles, and kind of always this, as you said, when you're at the receiving end of the doctor's advices, you know, yeah, they know what they're doing. At the same time, they don't know how we want to live our lives. Very often, they don't know much about amputation and prosthesis, and then being forced into yet another step on that journey. So we have 2020, not even 2 years, well, a bit more than 2 years probably by now. What happened since? You said at that time you said, well, it seems like a door is opening. It seems like, okay, something else make a decision for me. I'm going to be an amputee. Let's make the best of it. Being an amputee for 2 years is not really long, but looking at your social media feed, looking at some local news and whatever, wherever I found you online, you look like a seasoned, experienced, very active amputee. What happened in these 2 years? How did you manage to be so active so quickly?
Absolutely. So, you know, to kind of, you know, back up a little bit, 2018 I had the opportunity to see two of my friends that I met as a kid participate in the Paralympics. And 10 years ago, I became really good friends with Brenna Huckabee. Brenna Huckabee is a three-time gold medalist on the Paralympic snowboarding team. And Brenna and I actually met through a pediatric cancer organization called the Sunshine Kids Foundation.
Yeah.
And so Brenna and I both served as national ambassadors together with them. And that was at the time where Brenna was one of the first individuals I met with limb loss that also had osteosarcoma. And at this point in her journey, she was, you know, she was starting to thrive. She was on that, you know, that first turning point for her of that journey of towards really experiencing the freedom and what it's like to maximize your life as someone with limb loss. And Brenna also introduced me to Noah Elliott, who is also an osteosarcoma survivor and as well as Paralympic snowboarder and gold medalist. And so 2018 was a really cool year because I watched both Brenna and Noah compete. And that's where, you know, this year, that year was the really the probably a turning point where I started reframing the way I viewed the world as someone with limb loss. Because in the back of my mind, you know, I was living with chronic pain. I was limited on what I can and cannot do with the current state of my leg. Mm. And so after the accident, it was so at this point, when I had the accident, it's the height of the pandemic. So there's, you know, the hospital, the hospital rooms and hospital beds were scarce. And so they actually had to turn the urgent care hallway into my room. And so we, you know, we couldn't have any guests. There could be no visitors. And so it was, I had a lot of time to sit with myself, sit with my thoughts. And as well as that's the beauty of technology nowadays. And so you can FaceTime people. And so Brenna and Noah were, you know, between, you know, I had the accident on the 17th, surgery was on the 20th because we were waiting for my surgeon to return back to New Mexico. And I FaceTimed Brenna and Noah. And I shared with them, you know, the day that I've anticipated, because at this point, I've already started conversations with them prior, because I knew that amputation was inevitable because of my lifestyle and the risks that come with the limb salvage. And so Brenna, being someone that had her amputation from the very beginning in her journey, but Noah, the metal implant, his body rejected it. And ended up with an infection. And so eventually had the amputation. And so I both asked them, like, kind of walk me through those first couple of years. And both of them immediately just share, like, I'll tell you, it'll be one of the hardest things that you ever experienced. You know, they struggled with their identity. They were struggling with getting their confidence back, and just navigating life with limb loss is difficult. But you see them thriving now. And I asked them, I said, then what was the turning point? What was different? And both of them shared, they pursued a goal and they were pursuing purposes that were bigger than the pain.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, you know, after I FaceTimed them and before I had surgery, I sat with that and I knew, okay, I'm going to own, it's going to be hard. But at the same time too, I know that an outlet is pursuing a purpose that's bigger than the pain. And I, you know, I reflected back on, you know, after being diagnosed with osteosarcoma, and then as well as, you know, when I was younger, I was abandoned, and thinking about what were those coping mechanisms and how did I work through that? And it was always, I had a purpose, whether that was service and philanthropy or having some sort of positive outlet. And so I knew movement and recreation and sports became such a huge outlet for me. Mm. My last, you know, those final years leading up to my amputation. And I thought, okay, how do I accelerate this? How do I have this as my North Star through this process? And so I wrote down, you know, I wrote down five goals. You know, one was I want to return to cycling as soon as I possibly can. Second is I always wanted to run. And, you know, I haven't been able to run since I was 14 years old. And so learning how to run again was a goal of mine. Third was I want to return to skiing. I was a sit skier before my accident. And so sit skiing, perks to sit skiing, you don't need your legs. So I was able to, you know, sit skiing. And then the fourth goal was be open to new possibilities and opportunities and discover a new hobby. And then the fifth was for my 1 year anniversary, have some sort of culminating race to celebrate. And I just knew that if I had those as guiding principles, I would be able to work through the hardships, because when things got difficult, I knew I had a North Star I was working towards. And those five were my outlets. And so there were quite a few people that came along this journey that I had met randomly. It was, they'd be put in a group text with me. They'd slide into my DMs, or I'd slide into their DMs, and really rippled. I think the key was ultimately I had some North Stars that I was working towards and I had goals. I was willing to own that it's going to suck, but I wasn't going to sit in that and stay in it.
I mean, just listening to you, that sounds amazing, I think. And it sounds like also great combination between this kind of where you push yourself, but where you also allow others to help, something which many of us find hard, I must say. but also this having others on your side who say, well, I'm willing to talk openly. I'm willing to tell you, you know, it might be very difficult. And there might be things where you just say, oh, I hate that amputation. I hate my body about it. I hate my being dependent about it. But at the same time, as you said.
Yeah, no, there's two things. You have to be vulnerable to ask for help.
Yeah. And I'm always a bit torn when I... You know, it's very often, especially with social media and all the, let's say, the fakeness around it, where people say, you know, no limit but the sky, the only disability is the wrong mindset. And I partly go with that. And at the same time, I think it takes responsibility from the community around us away to also make sure as a community not to dump all the strength it takes on the individual who is struggling with so many things on the same time. And this being able to find the right balance between said, yes, most of it is on my shoulder and it's in my head, but it's not just there. It's also the health system and the community around it and attitudes and just ups and downs in normal life where you say, well, at the moment, this is not the only one I'm struggling with. This is one of five or six or seven issues. And at the moment, I just need a break. And other times I just need someone to kick me in the butt and say, stop whinging and get going and finding the balance. And I think that's always something where I'm really glad if people speak out and say, this is how it was for me. And yes, lots of it is in the mind, but it's not all there. Yeah, Kyle, where you said, okay, you had these goals and the one was 1 year down the line, 1 year when I'm away from this corridor here, I want to celebrate it with something, a sporty event. How did that go?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, the end of September, I had a friend of mine that sent me a text to invite me to the Challenge Athletes Foundation's annual challenge weekend. And a part of that challenge weekend is a triathlon. And at this point, you know, I thought a triathlon would have been my final goal. And I think it's one thing, you know, for me, I really wanted to be able to run at this point. But unfortunately, navigating the health system was extremely hard. And I had to readjust my expectations of where I would be. You know, at this point, leading up to a year in, you know, I've already been denied six times for a microprocessor knee. You know, I had a pretty at a prosthetist that did not provide me the best care. But with that led me to be able to fight for myself, fight for what I need. And so, you know, I ended up finding, you know, a better prosthetist. And, you know, I think that is one of the most important things is give yourself some grace your first year, because that first year you made a great comment. It's the health system is also a barrier. And it's unfortunately is not designed. The intentions are to help you thrive and get your life back, but the systems are designed to limit you and are really hard to navigate. And so for my 1 year, I wanted to do the full triathlon, but you know what? I couldn't. So I focused on the two things I could do. And so I did, you know, I participated in the 1 mile open water swim. And then as well as I participated in the 44 mile bike ride throughout the mountains and hills of San Diego. And it was one of the most beautiful experiences, because being able to have a challenge to work towards and, you know, put your mind and body through the training and the process, you start developing some other benefits. Yes, there's the physical benefits, but you start refining your confidence in yourself. You find pride in your identity of who you are. But also, I think I developed a lot of self-love through it. And so to be able to, you know, come out of the swim and then go into the bike ride, and a part of the ride, there's this quite a bit of significant climbing, and there's a final climb up Mount Soledad. And it was such an overwhelming feeling when I got to the summit of that mountain. You know, I climbed it on one leg with my, I cycle with one leg, and to be able to get to the top and look back on how far you've come, it's, you know, you put into perspective how strong your mind and body is when you just adapt and adjust. Because end of the day, our minds and bodies will just adjust over life.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's so funny because you hear people, I don't know how you do it. End of the day, all of us will probably say, you just do it. I mean, exactly. Your mind and body just adjust to your new norm. And so, but the end of the day, I think where a lot of us struggle is we prevent ourselves from moving forward towards any sort of goals is because we're just deeply afraid, and fear is what holds us back.
Yeah.
And rather than, and I think if we all, and I think that's a part that I worked through, is like reframing expectations. And rather than the goal was just to finish and just to show up. And so I did that for, you know, my 1 year celebration, which that 1 year, that taste of triathlon is what set me on the path to where I am today.
Yeah. Yeah. Great. What you just said really resonates with me. What you said, kind of this getting into sports and also having the chance to maybe acquire sports equipment and running blade or so, is so much more than just being sporty. Where you said, you know, the whole thing of social participation. So being part of a, you know, being able to engage with the sports team or sport is not just about a sport, but is it finally allows me to fully participate again. And as you said, with it comes confidence, and that confidence shows in my next job interview or when I think, well, I can tackle another challenge which has nothing to do with my physical disability. But I think it's so important. And whenever we have these discussions with the health service, with the providers, it never goes beyond that. It's so much, no, you don't have a right to be in a jogging club or something. We say, it's not about that. That is just the outlet. It shows that I can fully participate in the very society I live in. And even here, I think in Germany, we have a pretty good health system. We're very good at complaining, but actually we have a good health system. But when it comes to sports equipment, if you're an adult, there is nothing. You either pay out of pocket or you don't get it. Yeah. Yeah, but as you said, reframing and the goal also is the journey. So, you know, it's about getting started and you will get better. And even if in the beginning it might just be a 200 meter walk, and then it's a 500 meter walk, and then maybe it's a slight jog or a wobbling walk, and just seeing what the body can do and how you can adjust. I think that is so important, and not going for this perfect first try, which will never happen. Even if you don't struggle with a disability or limitation, I mean, it's the same for other people who hop the first time on skis or on ice skating. Or so it's it looks rather clumsy looking back. But by now, you're way beyond just having a little preview at what a para triathlete could be. You're now up there. You're doing your triathlons. You're mingling with the big names in the scene. Yeah. What were the most rewarding experiences in that regard?
You know, the most rewarding is the community.
Yeah.
I think you get to be surrounded by a group of individuals that understand you on a level that many cannot. And, you know, it's a really powerful space to be in, because for me, I look at it this way. Our disability is not someone's inspiration. We are here to be a team of athletes, individuals that have goals and dreams and aspirations, and we're here to push each other. I think what is amazing about this community is, you know, first off, I built some of the best friends and individuals that are willing to teach me and mentor me and push me. So I think the most rewarding, the most number one rewarding is this deep, genuine, authentic community of individuals that see you and know you on a level that others don't. But also to have a space where you have a community that's going to push you. That really is. That allows you to be able to have a space to unlock like what is physically possible about your physical body and your mind, but also to have a space that you're that you have mentorship to know how you adapt. Because at the end of the day, anyone can participate in the sport in these three disciplines. It just takes a little bit of creativity and engineering to adapt.
Yeah.
And so I think that's what's really cool about this community is, you know, yes, there's so many sports, but there's something about triathlon that I found is that there's no ego. There's a sense of humbleness and authenticity that I see individuals, because all of us go into this sport because we want to push ourselves physically and mentally and to have that space of a community that's willing to challenge it.
You're just talking about community and how community brings out the best in us in this way of having a safe, physically and emotionally safe space to actually develop, but also to be vulnerable and also to be pushed when you need it and be supported when you need it. And I know just recently you've been part of one of the, what I think, most awe-inspiring communities I've ever seen. You've been part of the Romp climbing team to climb Cotopaxi back in October last year, I think it was. Can you tell us a bit more about Romp as an organization and also what Romp stands for and this amazing once a year climb in Cotopaxi in Latin America?
Absolutely. So the Range of Motion Project is a nonprofit organization that is committed to bridging the gap to access to the critical care for prosthetics and orthotics for individuals with limb loss and limb difference throughout South America and in the United States. And so this organization, one, I'm just blown away with the level of care that the practitioners and the volunteers are providing throughout, you know, Ecuador, Guatemala, and the Amazon, and then expanding to the most needy community in the United States. And so knowing that, we know that mobility should be accessible to everyone. You know, mobility is a right, not a privilege. And so what the Range of Motion Project has done such a good job at is cultivating the opportunity for the limb loss community, the ONP community, or anyone that's passionate about helping individuals get their mobility back to volunteer and make a difference. And, you know, the organization has a clinic in Ecuador, a clinic in Guatemala, and then also most recently, a mobile initiative into the Amazon. And these are communities that have limited, little to no access or resources for proper prosthetics. And as well as like their healthcare systems are often struggling and in shambles. And so as this organization is meeting the communities where they need it most, and they have an annual climb called the climb for Cotopaxi. And so for those that don't know, Cotopaxi is the second highest summit in Ecuador, and it's a 19,347 foot glaciered volcano. And every year they take a team of individuals with limb loss, but also members that are advocates and champions for the limb loss and limb difference community. And together we will fundraise upwards of $150,000 to provide not only the high quality care, but also provide that much needed prosthetic equipment and devices for these patients that in the communities that where we're climbing. And so as a team, we will summit Cotopaxi at the end of our trip. And the purpose of the climb is really to show what's possible when you have access to care and you have access to equipment, because an individual with limb loss is only disabled because they don't have access to proper equipment. Yeah. And so having access to, you know, the needed prosthetic or orthotic allows them to be able to gain their mobility back so that they can work towards their summit or their peak in life. And so, you know, thinking so often, and so what's for me now, I look at my survival, you know, my grit and my access as a privilege. And so with privilege comes responsibility. And with responsibility is, I think as for me, I have a philosophy of kind of a worldview. It's every single person deserves to experience what I get to experience. And as well as I want every single human to thrive the way that I'm thriving right now. And so that comes with access to care and access to equipment. And so as a team, it was just so beautiful because it was the first year in our 8-year history, the entire team made it to the summit. And that was just such a beautiful moment to stand on the top of Cotopaxi. And you could just see you're surrounded by peaks and you can see the steam coming from the volcano. But what was powerful is, I mean, it was extremely hard. I'm not going to lie. Like it was extremely difficult because you're climbing, you start the climb in the middle of the night. And throughout the night, you have a lot of moments to reflect. You know, it's pure stillness and quiet. You can just hear the crunching of the snow, you know, under your feet, the deep breathing that we're all having because you have a lack of oxygen. And you see either in front of you or behind you, different headlamps, because we're all at different places working towards the summit. And in the moments where, you know, you're struggling and it's extremely difficult, you're reminded why you do what you're doing, because there's countless individuals that don't even have access to a prosthetic to get them to a clinic to get care, let alone, you know, be able to make it to the bus stop to take them to the trailhead and for them to climb. And so to be able to give, you know, to be able to make it to the summit and to then for us to fund those, you know, that critical equipment and care was just so meaningful.
And I can still see how you're moved by the experience and by the thoughts of it. And yeah. I mean, I was following LP's posting and others constantly in October last year, and was really moved when I heard, okay, it's also the first year, as you said, where all members of the team actually made it up there. And it's a great, I think it's another great proof how a few committed individuals who come together with a purpose, who are willing to put in the work, but who are also there just for the joy of it, but also for giving back to the community, giving back to the wider society, how they can actually make a difference. And as you said, it's a rather small group. Okay, Romp is rather experienced, and LP is a shaker and maker and someone who just enables things. But in the end, it's a very small group. And as you said, raising upwards of $150,000. And at the same time, the call for action to anyone who still has secondhand components in good conditions, which they're willing to donate. And this is also a call I want to make right here. If you have, or if you know someone who has old prosthetic limbs, orthotics, anything that can still be used, please reach out to Romp or reach out to me and make sure we donate them and give them a second life. Yeah, Kyle, you said earlier, a new year, new challenges, new goals, a new drive. What's on your agenda for this year? What are some of the things that actually where you're really looking forward to in the coming months?
Absolutely. So this year is a really unique opportunity where I've been able to help lead and create a coalition called So New Mexicans Can Move. One of as you brought up earlier on, you know, on the podcast, is that access to physical activity is often limited, and it's really difficult for someone with a limb loss or limb difference to participate in physical activity is because of the high cost of that secondary device that's needed to experience it. And unfortunately, especially in the United States healthcare system, those secondary devices for physical activity through the eyes of insurance are deemed not medically necessary. And if there's anyone that knows anything, we know that there's just direct medical benefits and also emotional benefits that come from being able to access recreation and physical activity. And so working alongside the American Association of Orthotics and Prosthetics, and as well as the Amputee Coalition, and we're introducing legislation in New Mexico to not only create insurance fairness for orthotics and prosthetics, but also to be the first state in the country to mandate that private insurers have to consider recreation and physical activity as medically necessary.
That is so cool. That is, that is cool.
Creating access. So, you know, in 2 weeks, we're introducing this legislation in the New Mexico State House, thanks to Representative Liz Thompson and Kathleen Cates. And so it's scary. It's, you know, to be the first in anything or to champion a new initiative is daunting. But we know that there's a compound effect. So, you know, it takes that first piece of legislation to ultimately ripple across the United States to create that precedent. And so, you know, I'm working towards that. And then, as I mentioned last year, you know, after I got introduced to the sport of triathlon, you know, I ended up competing in the national championships and getting the bronze medal in the PTS2 class, which is often where the above knees compete in. And had the opportunity and privilege to train at the Olympic and Paralympic Training Center and fallen in love with the sport. And so this year is going to be taking the opportunity to continue loving the sport, falling in love with the process, and then also racing and competing on the world paratriathlon circuit. And so going to take this year to discover what's possible, see what happens. And consistently for me, it's just a positive outlet for me to find emotional and physical healing and lean into this community that I've fallen in love with. But I hope, you know, this year to continue being a champion for disability rights and to bridge access. And as I told you, I sometimes wonder, why did I decide that next day to immediately get out of bed and work towards my goals? And I know that everyone is different and it's hard. Like that process and that decision-making to get out of bed is hard, to work towards your goals, to there are so many barriers and challenges that come with being someone with limb loss. And so I look at my grit and my survival as a privilege. And I want every single person to thrive in their own version of thrive. And I hope that, you know, I can play just a small role helping bridge the gap to access to whether it's the equipment or the care or the services that they need so that they can work towards their end goal. Whatever that goal may be, like that's beautiful. And so, you know, kind of spending my time and effort in those spaces this year and then continue volunteering with organizations and being a mentor and an advocate.
Great. That sounds great. Carl, I would like to offer you something here, and I'm not sure if that's of any help for you, but in terms of your initiatives to actually make sure some of the things that really would help people with limb loss or from the limb difference community to actually have better access to the right equipment, to the right support, and also to financial support, and not just on goodwill grants from charities, but actually in law through health service providers. If it helps, if you want to use some part or some space on the blog, feel free to write something on the blog to reach out there. It's not a huge audience, but it's significant, and please feel free to use it. I'm always want to give a hand where these really important pioneering initiatives are being started. So yeah, please feel free.
Fantastic.
Kyle, we are already way over our time. It's always a pleasure talking with you. It's always really, you're really interesting also for me to see what others are doing. And yeah, the stories behind the names I know from Instagram and other social media. It's a real pleasure. Thank you so very much for coming on the show and talking genuinely from the bottom of your heart about your experiences and what moves you. I hope we stay in contact, and otherwise all the best for this year and for all the years to come. And yeah, keep me in the loop about the initiatives you're involved in.
Thank you so much. And everyone that's listening, feel free to connect with me at any point. Happy to be a friend, a resource, a partner in an adventure. So thank you all so much for having me on.
That sounds great. Great.
I hope you enjoyed the show. Make sure to hit the subscribe button so you don't miss any of the new episodes. And I would really appreciate it if you leave me a rating on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. If you want to learn more about the active amputee, make sure to head over to www.theactiveamputee.org, where you find hundreds of articles from amputees for amputees. Articles filled with inspiration, information, and encouragement to be active and live a rewarding life. I see you all again for the next episode. Until then, all the best. This is Bjorn from The Active Amputee.